Very good afternoon to you, Namibia. You are now tuned into Eagle FM, and this is On The Radar. I'm your host, Nafa Happy Juju, bringing you not just the news, but the narrative behind the headlines. Here on The Radar, we go beyond the bullet points. We slow it down, zoom in, and examine the heartbeat of the nation. From the chambers of parliament to the dusty roads of our forgotten regions, we give stories the space they need and the analysis they deserve. Now, this show isn't just about what's happening. It's about why it's happening. Who's making the calls and how it affects you. Our conversations are deep dives backed by archived reports and real voices and context that doesn't expire within you circle. Now, whether you're driving through Katutura, sitting in Swakopmund, or listening from the diaspora, On The Radar is where critical conversations unfold. Stream us live via our Eagle FM website. Follow us on our digital platforms such as Eagle FM Namibia on Facebook, LinkedIn, or Instagram. And plug into our WhatsApp channel for behind-the-scenes content and exclusive updates. And not to forget our Eagle FM app, available on App Store or Play Store. This is On The Radar, thoughtful radio for thinking people. Let's get right into it. And now for what's making headlines and up for discussion on today's episode. As Africa undergoes a structural transformation, shifting from agriculture-dominated economics to industrial and service-based sectors, the continent faces a new frontier of challenges and opportunities as well. Now, one pressing but under-addressed concern is occupational safety and health, also abbreviated as OSH or OSH, particularly within evolving supply chains that span from formal and informal sectors. The rapid expansion of sectors such as manufacturing, construction, agribusiness and logistics has created new jobs, but many of those roles come with hazardous working conditions, especially for low-skilled and informal workers. Now, with the diversification of economic activities, supply chains are becoming more complex, often involving multiple tiers of subcontractors, informal enterprises, and cross-border operations. Unfortunately, this complexity frequently leads to poor oversight, weak enforcement of safety standards, and inadequate protection for workers. For example, workers in informal mining operations, logistics, garment manufacturing, and agriculture are often exposed to extreme heat, toxic substances, repetitive strains, and physical hazards without proper training, personal protective equipment, also known as PPE, or access to health care. Now, gender also plays a role. Women in supply chains may face additional risks such as sexual harassment, reproductive health hazards, and discrimination in access to training or protective measures. Now, promoting OSH in supply chains requires governments, regional bodies like the African Union, and private actors to work collaboratively. One solution could be integration of OSH, occupational safety and health standards, into public procurement and trade policies, making safety and health a competitive advantage rather than a cost burden. Now, there's also a need for stronger regulation and inspection mechanisms, particularly in sectors where informal labor is high. Capacity building through training, awareness and campaigns, and support for labor unions can empower workers to assert their rights and demand safer conditions. Also, data collection and reporting system should be strengthened to monitor occupational health outcomes and enforce compliance more effectively. Now, Africa's structural transformation cannot be truly inclusive or sustainable without prioritizing the dignity, the health, and the safety of the workers that are driving it forward or propelling it forward. Now, by embedding occupational safety and health principles into the foundation of emerging supply chains, the continent can not only prevent exploitation and fatalities, but also promote productivity as well as attract responsible investment and build resilient economics rooted in decent work. Now, speaking at the opening of the International Training Program on Occupational Health and Safety in Supply Chain, Minister of Justice and Labor Relations, Philemon Wiseman Emmanuel, called for greater prioritization of health and safety standards across African workplaces. He was addressing trade union representatives from across the continent. Now, the minister emphasized the shared responsibility of government and social partners, partner unions in promoting workplace safety and resolving disputes. And I quote, "It is the responsibility of both government and our social partner unions to resolve disputes through dialogue," Emmanuel stated. Now, the training program is hosted by the International Labour Organization, ILO, which brings together key stakeholders to strengthen occupational health and safety in Africa's evolving supply chains. And the initiative forms part of a broader ILO push to ensure decent as well as safe working conditions as countries across the continent undergo economic transformation. Let's now take a listen to Wiseman Emmanuel on what he had to say.
It should not be about how many people are showing up for work anymore. That should not be the question that preoccupies us. But we should now speak of how many of these people are now skilled, so that they are able to do value addition. Value addition to the abundant, you know, resources that we have in our respective countries. Value addition in terms of employment creations in our respective nations. Value addition in terms of creating and impacting skill for the purpose of repurposing our institutions and our production lines. The skill intensive is a matter of a strategic requirement. Need every worker to think differently. We no longer need workers that are mechanical. We need workers that are able to to produce. We have food scarcities and, you know, food insecurities across the globe. What values are the workers bringing forward? And this is the question lying at the core of structural transformation. As our workers then get into the field to produce food for the citizens or for the populations of Africa, what is it that we must do to protect them? As they enter mines and various plants in order to add value, are they protected from occupational accidents and occupational diseases? So that the environment is enabling for these workers to add value. And what value are we bringing forward as trade unions to the conversation? I think I had some unfriendly words to work towards some of the union leaders, to the extent that their conduct sometimes want to create an impression that government is a trade union. Government is not. Government is part of the equation. When we talk about the tripartite equation, there are three components. Government is one of those elements, or constituting element, or component, if you so wish. The worker is another, so is the employer. Each one of those social partner is dressed differently. Government must be dressed under consciousness. That's why I have been saying we need a conscious government that is fully aware what is expected and what is required to put in place and to create a harmonious industrial relation and a productive labor market. That can only be achieved if we have a conscious government. employer must be dressed under responsibility. A responsible employer. That is sensitive about government expectation or the expectation of a conscious government, but equally aware of the workers' rights and would strive at all material times to ensure that workers are afforded decent employment condition. Workers are protected as they enter the production plants. And so many other things that are incidental to that process. That's a responsible. I mean, that's it's not a responsible employer, but a reasonable employer. Sorry. And then the worker on the other hand need to be very responsible. Responsible insofar as self-application is concerned. Making sure that as a worker, the worker brings him or herself a worker is responsible enough to know what the operational requirements of the employer is. That of a reasonable employer. A worker is reasonable enough to inform him or herself about the code of ethics and various operational policies so that he or she doesn't find himself in conflict with a reasonable employer. And that's what completes the equation. A conscious government, a reasonable employer, and a responsible employee. And if you so wish, and this is probably one of the fourth social partner that we need to add to that equation. Our conversation must not be behind doors. We need a fourth social partner to the tripartite equations, and that's the media. But the media need to be ethical. A conscious government, a reasonable employer, a responsible worker, and an ethical media. That is free from biasness, and that is strictly under the command of objectivity or objective reporting. Once we protect that equation, we will be better nations. Accidents that are happening to our workers must be brought to the fore. They must be reported. Employers must be reasonable enough to compensate workers that are injured at workplaces. It's not negotiable. We must not even get to a boardroom to discuss whether an employee that is injured at a workplace needs to be compensated or not. Because we have a reasonable employer who understands that this type of a situation doesn't even need a conversation. But we had also a responsible employee who has made sure that safety gears were worn before entering the plant. And we have a conscious government that made sure that it put in place the policy framework and the legislative framework within which such rights can be enforced.
Yeah, and there you had it from Minister of Justice and Labor Relations, Philemon Wiseman Emmanuel, as he's talking about occupational health and safety, of course, at the training that is currently underway and addressing people from all over Africa, some from Tanzania, some from Zambia, and other places. Now, he did speak about the tripartite agreement or the tripartite, or let's say the equation which makes up those that are at the table of, or should be at the table of discussing about in terms of such matters. And he spoke of a conscious government coinciding of certain components, that one of being a conscious government as a reasonable employer and a responsible employee. And of course, an employer can be reasonable, but then the employee should also be responsible. And another component that he did speak about that often I think is overlooked but should also be emphasized is an ethical media that is objective and not biased. Because at the end of the day, if a particular company is said to be exploiting its workers and media comes in and they are biased and they are for the company, not being factual in their reporting, this could distort what is actually on the table and the results that should come out of it. So all those components are very important when we're talking about occupational health and safety and occupational, as we already hear about it, it's workplace health of the workers in the workplace, as well as the safety of the people in the workplace. It's often not really addressed, but quite important. I mean, it's only fair enough that when a worker, when employee is at work, they should be able to come in and know that I am safe here and my safety is catered for here. And in the area where it is not, I can speak up to my employer, and the employer should be reasonable enough to hear the challenges of the certain employees. You know, occupational health and safety can go even as perhaps something that we overlook. An employee is sitting for long hours and they develop backache with their spinal cord sort of developing some sort of strains. And in the long run, after some years, this employee has chronic back pain, all because of sitting for very long or long periods of time. Or perhaps in other workplaces where employees get to stand for the entire time that they come on shift. I remember some time ago when I was a waitress when I was a teenager, and we were not allowed to sit. We were supposed to stand all the time. So sometimes when I actually go to a restaurant and you see certain, or perhaps even in the supermarkets, have you ever really noticed that there are hardly some supermarkets that don't even have chairs? I mean, you mean the employee must just be standing the whole time? And why is that? Why can't they have a chair where they can actually sit on, and when perhaps something that requires more time and energy comes up, or perhaps a customer comes through and they have to engage them or have to do that, then they stand up and attend to them. But I don't see anything wrong with an employee having to sit for 10 minutes or so. But for some, they completely deprive them of that. But sometimes you as an employee have to be very reasonable. Come to think of it yourself. For how long can you also staying for such long periods of time, and the only time you can actually get to sit down is when it's lunch break. What does this pose to your health in the long run? And happy employee also makes the workplace very productive. So those are some of the stuff that we really have to look into when we're talking about occupational health and safety. Let's look at those informal sectors where they have employees that are working for them, but they are not advocated for. Now, when we're talking about occupational health and safety, we're not just talking about offices. We're not just talking about those that have the voice to be vocal. What about those that they have never even had? If there is such a thing as occupational health and safety, that safety must be advocated for them in the workplace, the informal sector. What about those ones? Who's going to address them? And I think this is where trade unions come in. And this is the role that they have to play. And hence why I believe the training is undergoing and it's going up until Friday, where trade unions are being taught, are being trained, are being equipped with the necessary skills that they need to have. Because you can be so much of a trade union and only see, you see your people that you're advocating for and see that next person that you're advocating to as an enemy. But then there is so much that still needs to be put on the table. Now, that being said, let's pause right here and take a commercial break, but we'll be back still to discuss this. And I have someone interesting in studio who's going to help me unpack that. Stay tuned. This is On the Radar Analysis.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back. Like I said, you are listening to On the Radar Analysis right here on Eagle FM. Our studio line is also very much open for you to come through and air opinions and contributions right here or ask questions. 0832888401 is the number in studio. Now, of course, we are talking about occupational health and safety. Now, occupational health and safety is a very vital component of every workplace because it protects the most valuable assets any organization or company has, its human resource, its people. Now, let's now engage Sean Jordan with him on why integrating occupational safety and health into every workplace is essential. Sean Jordan, welcome to On the Radar.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, pleasure. So kindly walk us through why integrating occupational health and safety into every workplace is very vital.
What's so interesting about this topic is that when, like last week, we had I think it was either Thursday or Friday, where we were discussing the IMF's report on informal, the labor report. And one of the interesting things we did come across was complaints about occupational health and safety of the workers, specifically because most of Namibia's workforce work in the informal economy, right?
Yeah.
So they don't have the necessary protections for receiving adequate health and safety guidelines, protocols, and measures. So one of the biggest reasons why, and I think it's the most obvious reason as to why occupational health and safety is integral, is protecting lives and preventing injury.
Yes.
Specifically because, like, every year, it has been reported that millions of workers suffer injuries or die due to unsafe working conditions.
Mm-hmm.
So OSH ensures that hazards are identified, assessed, and controlled, significantly reducing the risk of accidents, illnesses, and fatalities. Like, so from construction offices to an everyday restaurant, every setting carries its own risks that need to be managed, and that is very important. Mm. Yes, the one that's more close to my own heart personally, as someone who was a mental health practitioner in a past life, is that it does promote like physical and mental health. Because OSH is not only about preventing accidents, it also safeguards long-term health, right?
Look at that.
Yeah. And it includes protection from harmful chemicals, repetitive strain injuries, heat stress, and even mental health challenges like burnout and stress. Mm-hmm. Part of the psychological impact that a lack of safety in the workplace can promote is the fact that it genuinely does generate a lot of stress. And with stress, stress can lead to not only just a short-term illness or like, you know, a fainting spell, stuff like that. It can also lead to very long-term effects like hypertension, mm-hmm. diabetes, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's really important that a healthy workforce is more resilient, happier, mm-hmm. and more productive. I think another big reason as to why it's important is that it does reduce costs and promote and boost productivity.
Yeah.
One thing that we've noticed when delving deep into this topic is that like unsafe workplaces do result in high medical costs, legal liabilities and compensation claims and lost working days, which can be very detrimental to the economy, can be very detrimental to individual organizations and to the person themselves, because they're not only, they're also losing out on valuable income. So by investing in safety and health, employers save money in the long run and improve operational efficiency, because also a lack of health and safety also puts the machinery, the different products that you produce,
that the employees he's working with,
it also puts that at risk, which means that that's more outlay that the company has to give out in order to compensate for that. So a healthy employees also take fewer sick days and are more engaged at work. I think this is true with everyone, because like everyone can understand like going into a toxic work environment, it's very, you just don't want to do it. You just don't want to get up. You just don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. And
you won't be so productive as if you were really motivated, no?
Like as soon as you get to the office, all you want to do is go home. As soon as you get to wherever you're working, all you want to do is get home. All you want to do is look forward to 5 o'clock and you won't be productive. You won't be the best employee you can be. And in turn, you won't be able to produce the best product or service that you can provide. I think the one that a lot of companies love thinking about specifically is the ethical and legal responsibilities that they have to fulfill. So like in most countries like Namibia, there are provisions for workplace safety. It's a legal requirement, right? It's not just an ethical requirement, but a legal one. So employers have a solemn duty to care for and protect their workers. And so failure to comply can lead to lawsuits, fines, or business closures. We have to also remember that we're very lucky to be in a country that does have bodies to regulate these sorts of claims and issues. So it is in the best interest of the employer and the employee that the workplace is safe, secure, and conducive. Yeah, because like a lot of people don't know about occupational health and safety, again, is that they think as long as you have a hard hat, goggles and a vest or whatever whatever physical safety measures you employ, it's okay. You can just, it's fine. But a lot of people don't realize that you need to promote a sense of safety, not just the physical manifestations of it. I think it is also important because it builds a culture of respect and accountability. integrating OSH into the workplace does foster a culture of care, right? Responsibility and respect. Mm-hmm. It encourages collaboration between management and workers, and it does, in my opinion, and from what we've seen, boost morale and builds trust. The culture often also spills over into better teamwork, loyalty, and company reputation because, again, a happy workforce will work happily, and a happy workforce will produce more.
Exactly.
Right? Mm-hmm. And I think finally the last one, and I think this is the more unseen mm-hmm. one, is that it does, OSH does support sustainable economic growth. It's a real thing. So in like broader terms, or generally speaking, safe and healthy workplaces are critical to achieving sustainable development. They improve labor productivity, reducing the burden on healthcare systems, and contribute to economic stability. Right? I think this is also important for Africa, because Africa right now we're going through structural transformation. Yeah. And so integrating OSH ensures that progress doesn't come at the cost of work well-being. Mm. So yeah, those are some of the things that I believe are some of the reasons as to why it's mm-hmm. important to integrate this thing. Another thing that I would like to also add is that with occupational safety and health, we need to look at this not just as the workplace. We need to foster this culture across the board.
Mm.
So in schools, in our homes, in any place that requires the number one resource, which is humans, we need to foster that sense of safety and health.
Mm.
It starts at home.
I hear you. Now, Sean, while you're actually there, how do you think, in terms of media and media practitioner, how can we better make sure that occupational health and safety is promoted for a media personnel?
Well, first of all, I think we're very fortunate that the immediate first thing that comes to mind is the fact that we have press freedom. So we don't necessarily have the fear of like being shot in the street for reporting on something or being assaulted, being admonished or anything like that. You see what I mean? So that's one aspect that I can say we're well on the way of doing.
Mm-hmm.
As a media practitioner, I think it's important that, we also need to realize that occupational health and safety does not just equate, like I said, hard hats, PPE.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't just equate that. It also equates you yourself as the employee taking measures to protect yourself, right? So, a lot of, like, for example, like if I go to an event, my bosses are aware of where I am. People are aware of what I'm doing. People are aware of what I'm there for.
Yeah.
And, another thing is your media card is so important. Make sure you have your media card. Make sure that you can move wherever you need to move to. Make sure you can go wherever you need to go to.
You were just speaking about the employee responsibility, a responsible employee.
Yes, yes. Like being a proactive employee is very, very essential because it means that if something happens, right, I can at least say, hey, legally or in whatever context, I can at least say, hey, I did my part. I was safe. I did what I was supposed to do within the legal context. You didn't bring your part, right? And that as it keeps you and your workplace as well safe, because it also means that safety for yourself and regarding your safety or your own safety automatically also means that you regard the safety of your colleagues and your peers around you. So everyone around you can be safe. Yeah.
Quite interesting. Yeah. And also something that, the Minister of Labor and, the Minister of Justice and Labor Relations pointed out is that we shouldn't even have to be on the table, on the negotiating table, whether an employee who gets injured at work should be compensated or not.
Yeah.
That's something that should be really obvious. I mean, I got injured while I'm in the workplace.
Yeah.
It's only fair that I get compensated, and we have to make room for accidents.
100%.
And you know, especially for those who are dealing with machineries, if peradventure, let's say for instance, they cut meat.
Yeah.
And God forbid they cut their finger.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't want to compensate someone like that.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
And you know, it will also take time for them to go to the hospital. But when they do go to the hospital, it to take time for them to actually heal and be back on their feet again. And it will also be a struggle for them to get another job.
Yeah.
Yeah. I in the very beginning of, the show that I host on Saturday is Life Lessons.
Yeah.
Right here on Eagle FM. I engaged a particular guy who works at Nedbank Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
And he had an accident some time ago.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, yes.
And he had to go. He suffered some brain, is it a brain contusion, something like that.
Mm.
And he had to learn how to speak again,
work
and all that.
Wow.
And that bank still kept him. And at the end of the day, he depreciated his medical aid.
Mm.
But you know what? The company still went out and took out money to still help him.
Mm.
He had just started working for them.
Wow.
And guess what?
Mm.
He wasn't no longer doing the same job that he was before, but he was still in that company and he's still there. Something that is more flexible to do. He works 8 to 5, 8 to 1 instead, or is it 8 to 2? You know, just it started off slowly, slowly. This helps, and you spoke about something very important there. This helps with the employee's mental health as well.
Mm.
Then we can be advocating for mental wellness.
Yeah.
If we are not putting measures in place.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. No, 100%. I think again, this is where we as a country should be really grateful for the country that we're living in currently,
yeah.
Because there are provisions made for a safe and fair workplace. There are provisions made for employee safety. There are acts in place that ensure that, employees, employers, and
yeah.
everyone in between are safe, taken care of. There's framework, there's legal and ethical framework that can be put in place so that, everyone can at least walk away fairly and within the bounds of the law.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate that. I will also say that it's equally impressive how companies like Nedbank are taking the initiative to help the employees out, especially in cases like these. I will say though, it's again important that for every formal company in the formal economy that's willing to help the employees in this way, there are about 1,000 in the informal sector that are not either able to or willing to help out the employees. And unfortunately, not everyone is literate enough to know the law or to know how to advocate for themselves in these cases.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in as much as workplace occupational health and safety is important, it's also important to educate and, bring information forth so that it makes information more accessible. Because if I know, for example, that like I was dismissed unfairly for something, I immediately know that I can go to either my trade union. If I'm a part of one, I can go to the Minister of Justice and Labor. I can go to the whistleblower's office. There are so many options that I have, but a lot of people don't know these things.
Exactly.
Like I was even talking to, an old classmate from high school. He's like he's a electrical engineer now.
Mm-hmm.
And he spoke about how he would sometimes hear of like people in the same field, but at different companies, being electrocuted, dying, being hurt, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them, would go with like the barest minimum, like not even would like leave the company with the barest minimum. They'd be fired.
And this was a breadwinner at some point.
Yeah.
For some houses and most household.
Yeah.
This is the breadwinner.
Yeah.
A husband to somebody and the wife and the children are depending on
him.
And even his own mom, his siblings are depending on him.
Yeah.
And now the person gets electrocuted and they don't even get compensation.
Yeah.
Or proper compensation for that matter.
Precisely. This and is, like, it happened because like, my classmate was telling me how he broke his leg. One day he fell from like one of the towers and broke his leg, and his company was once again also amazing with that. Like, they made sure that he was taken care of, made sure that the medical aid was good.
Yeah.
When, like your person from Nedbank, they also didn't have enough medical aid to mm-hmm. cover everything.
Mm-hmm.
So the company helped him cover that, like helped him get on his feet.
Yeah.
So this should not be, this should not be the exception to the rule. This should be the rule.
Mm-hmm.
This should be the standard,
yes.
right?
Mm-hmm.
For every employer to, for every employer and for every organization or entity to make sure that their employees are taken care of, especially with the history that we as Africans have with unfair working conditions, with unfair labor opportunities.
Mm.
We need to make sure that this is something that is really
implemented.
Yeah, implemented and really done fairly
mm-hmm.
with the aim of the worker in mind.
Mm. I like that.
Yeah.
And for now, let's take a listen to Kavihuha Muongoro, who is Tukna, Secretary General. Tukna is the Trade Union Congress of Namibia. Let's take a listen to what he had to say also at the training well underway in Windhoek.
Now, if we have to overwelcome our people, then we might end up in hospital. I don't want that. So the first speaker, I welcome you. My duty is just to emphasize how timely this event and gathering is. The world, for the past 2 years, the world is working very hard to define a new role of interactions. Who should play what in the areas of multilateralism? Who should play what in the areas of globalization? And who should play what in the areas of deterioration of our unions when it comes to climate change? We have come, as Namibia is a member of Pathfinder Countries Global Accelerator for Job and Social Protection. I think we have to see this as an opportunity to us as the leading country when we come to global accelerators of innovation. We have been a mirror in developing our national plans on how to implement global accelerator, which make a reference solely for social protection, and we believe that health and safety issues are integral of social protection. Health and safety have become also a fundamental human right. And I think it's a fundamental human right. Us in Africa, we have to reposition ourselves and ensure that these rights is observed across all investments. What is very, very interesting to us, beginning of this year, we were fortunate as a labor movement to form a part of the delegations that went and negotiate with the Ministers of Finance, Trade, and National Development so that they can make commitments with regard to ensure that where there is investments that form part of supply chain, social protection and worker rights are become integral part of those investments. And I want to quote from the document. Why am I interested in that? It's because the wording is so promising. And those wordings, if they remain there, and us, the labor movement, or those that have interest in labor, are not making reference to it time in and out, we might lose it. It is reflected on paragraph 49, A, Roman 2, where it says that the Ministers of Finance, Trade, and National Development will ensure, I want the word ensure, not encourage, not promote,
but we ensure that issues of social protections and labor standards are sufficiently, very important, are sufficiently addressed in their efforts to implement the agreement establishing AFTA. So that is a commitment that the African government, through their ministers, have made. And health and safety issues in supply chain is part of this labor standard. Now, when you are debating this, taking it forward, we also want to hear, how do you want the clause to read in our trade agreements? Because labor movement now are hard at work in ensuring that there is no trade without labor. For quite long, people go and talk about trade agreements and they forget about the one who is facilitating this. So having said that, I'm sure that the right person to present Namibia to you is supposed to be the minister, because he is our national leader assigned to us, who have to lead all of us, whether you are in Namibia or elsewhere. And he's going to deal with that. I just also need to inform you that we have secured your visit to Namib Mills on Wednesday afternoon, and you are going to be taken this process. Why Namib Mills is because it's where you can find a clear supply chain that leads, whether it can lead to chicken for the eggs for you to eat, or fodder for animals to feed on. So I hope that also with the NBC, you might also be welcome to accompany this team to that side event. Equally, I also want to encourage whether the whole week, if NBC through you that are here, you can talk to your managers so that at least every day we have two trade unions from across Africa that will be go and appear in our national television and you start telling our story. Labor, we have been taken as a second choice. And we know how important labor is. Now, if we don't go out aggressively to communicate to the masses how important the issues of labor are, who else will do it for us? So it's very important that this call, I will take it also talking to the editors, so that if you are called, whether you are from Kotu or wherever, come and appear in the national television of Namibia and talk about this, be free to do so. Because Namibia is one of the democratic countries. Of course, we have back and forth with our government. Sometimes when you want to push the labor language, they become hesitant. Employers, you know that they are good at maximizing their profit on your expenses. We are back and forth. But the good part is that we dialogue. The effectiveness of dialogue is something to be discussed, but at least we are dialogue. With this, you, thank you very much, and feel free. Now, if we have to over-welcome our people, then we might end up in hospital. I don't want that. So the first...
And there you had it from Kavihuha Mahongora, who is the Secretary General of TUCNA. For now, let's pause right here. When we do return, we shall be bringing you what's making headlines in terms of economic indicators.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook,
Instagram, and LinkedIn, our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Ipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe otete okoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala. Ono ngeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi kayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa. Ninge kwa tafanona Monika ko Eagle FM onore tatuimwe mbali hea di nola natu. Heari bali no heari ileko derewa bra hetatu natu bali o hetatu matatu o mafelane egelesa the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now we take you to what's making headlines in regards to the Namibian dollar compared to other currencies. Now, 1 US dollar today will get you 17 Namibian dollars and 72 cents, while 1 euro will get you 20 Namibian dollars and 66 cents. 1 pound sterling will get you 23 Namibian dollars and 88 cents, while 1 Chinese yen will get you 2 Namibian dollars and 47 cents. 1 Australian dollar will get you 11 Namibian dollars and 56 cents, while 1 Japanese yen will get you 0.12 Namibian dollars. Now, in regards to other economic indicators, Iceland's producer prices fell by 1.5% year-on-year in June 2025, reversing sharply from a 0.3% rise in the previous month. Now, this marked the first decline in producer prices since March 2023, as costs declined further in the metal industry at minus 13.4% versus minus 9.8% in May. Exported products, excluding marine products, at minus 12.7% versus minus 9.5%, while exported products were at minus 4.7% versus minus 2%. Meanwhile, producer prices in Poland declined by 1.8% year on year in June 2025, slightly more than the market expectations of a 1.5% drop, and following a 1.7% fall in the previous month. This marked the 24th consecutive month of producer price deflation and the sharpest decline since December 2024. The downturn was mainly driven by an ongoing deflation in manufacturing at -1.7% versus -1.2%. Greece's current account recorded a surplus of 0.20 billion euros in May 2025, reversing a deficit of €2.32 billion in the same month last year. Now, this also marked the country's first monthly surplus in the 3 months, driven by improvements across all components. The services surplus widened to €2.21 billion from €1.88 billion in May 2024, supported by rebos, tourism and transport revenues. At the same time, the secondary income turned positive, posting a surplus of €0.52 billion from €0.22 billion a year earlier. Meanwhile, the goods account deficit narrowed significantly to €2.36 billion from €3.45 billion. Steel futures in China rose to 3,170 per ton in July, the highest in over 3 months, as the outlook of lower output and public expenditure in construction purred the view of an oversupplied steel market. Chinese policymakers vowed to reform industrial policy to further the pledge to erase overcapacity. Now, such policy would aid margins for furnace and mills, as the ongoing poverty crisis in China and the growing momentum of protectionist trade policies from key steel importers eroded demand. Now, previously, major producer Biosteel stated it expects national output to fall by 50 million tons this year. In the meantime, prices were supported by the announcement of a 1.2 trillion hydropower plant project. In addition to supporting bids for ferrometals, the project signaled that the Chinese government will continue to use infrastructure projects as a way to stimulate its slowing economy and counter the impacts of its property crisis. And now, with that being said, let's pause right here. And when we do return, we shall be bringing you news beyond the borders. Now, remember, our studio line is also very much open for you to engage with us on 083-288-401. For now, I'll see you after the commercial break.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondo toto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utete opoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe kike kovano ile koshiwana. Kono ngeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna emi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi tayo loka. Opone ujendike nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge fata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatuimwe bali hea bi nola natu. Heali bali no heali ileko berewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now for news beyond the borders. We're starting off in South Africa. And then we move over to other regional news, and thereafter continental news, and then international news. Now we're talking about foot and mouth disease in Durban. Let's take a listen.
Is hosting. But let's take you to this news on the go. The Agricultural Department, in collaboration with a number of other bodies, is hosting a high-level national foot and mouth disease in Durban. Speaking there is Agricultural Minister John Steenhuisen. Let's listen in.
This is even more important given the issues that we currently face with the export systems, particularly as it relates to the United States of America. Another crucial area with the system has not worked during the recent outbreak was vaccine availability. The National FMD Vaccine Bank was depleted, the production cycle misaligned with outbreak realities, and most notably, Onderstepoort Biological Products currently lacks the infrastructure to produce FMD vaccines at the scale and speed required to respond to outbreaks. As a result, we were compelled to import vaccines from Botswana to mount a response. Now, this situation can only be viewed as a stopgap measure, but cannot be viewed as sustainable for a country with South Africa's livestock footprint and the export ambitions that we have for the red meat industry in South Africa. Government is taking this seriously, and we are stabilizing OBP, but that is going to take some time. In the interim, we are securing imports and working to establish forward-looking supply contracts that will ensure minimum stock levels of FMD vaccine and other priority vaccines before the next outbreak, not after it. But the reason why everybody is in this room today is because the message is very clear. The state cannot do it all on its own. That's why partnerships for growth are one of the key pillars of the Agriculture Department. So today I want to send a clear message to the industry. If you want predictability, then you're going to have to invest and partner with government. And we're calling on the livestock industry, especially the red meat, dairy and game sectors, to begin by partnering with us on vaccine procurement. This doesn't mean you have to put in place extensive measures to manage cold chains or manage the vaccines. But it does mean that, like in other agro industries, we establish a structured partnership that ensures that we are not caught unprepared again. The time has come to build a nationally managed but jointly funded vaccine bank, not only for foot and mouth disease, but for lumpy skin disease, brucellosis, Rift Valley fever, and all other controlled diseases that affect trade and production. This model has been tested and has worked well in other spheres of government. It is in the areas of public-private partnership that we've been able to overcome issues such as the electricity crisis in South Africa. And so it will require a public-private partnership to be able to get on top of foot and mouth disease. And lastly, we must confront the lack of infrastructure within our protection zones. As long as animals are forced to be moved illegally because of the absence of local abattoirs or feedlots, we will never be able to enforce movement control effectively. It is impossible for provincial and local government to roadblock every single route in or out of an area. And sadly, as we've seen in cases over the course of the last few months, people find a way to move animals out of disease management areas, when the sale of that animal is the difference between whether that family can eat that week, or school fees could be paid that week, or income could be brought into a household that week. And so we need to make sure that we move towards ensuring that we enforce movement control effectively. Because this isn't just a veterinary issue, it is also a spatial and planning issue. It's a rural development issue. And that's why we'll be earmarking funds in this fiscal year to support the establishment of feedlots and abattoirs within the protection zones, particularly in Limpopo, KwaZulu-Natal, and in Mpumalanga. These facilities must and will provide alternatives to the illicit trade or illicit movement of animals. They will create rural jobs.
Meanwhile, in Zimbabwe, regards to their health, Egyptian doctors are in Harare for free heart surgeries.
Zimbabwe restarted open heart surgeries in 2016 after a 13-year halt brought on by economic and political instability. And for years, the wealth had sought life-saving procedures abroad in places like India, while the poor faced silent preventable deaths. A team of 11 Egyptian doctors is stationed at the country's largest government referral hospital, Parire Nyatwa in Harare, offering children free heart disease treatment.
We got the team. We got very professional, very strong cardiac anesthesia, very good team in intensive care, very intelligent and very strong team in nurses. So it's an 11-person team that do everything in pediatric cardiac surgery.
The Egyptian doctors are being supported by local surgeons.
We're so ever so grateful to the Egyptians because it's very fulfilling work. You never know where these children may end up. You know, one may end up as a doctor who treats me. So it's definitely life-changing for us as practitioners and also for their families and communities.
Bimbai Chakanungwa is the mother of one of the children who received a free open heart surgery.
Today I'm so grateful, I don't want to lie. Here is the baby. She's back to life. And she's going to live a normal life like other babies. I'm so happy. I cannot express my happiness. I cannot express my gratitude to the doctors.
The Egyptian heart surgeons were brought to Zimbabwe by the NGO Gift of Life International with the support of the Harare Rotary Club. Pindai Duwe, Harare, Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe has qualified for the 2027 Men's Rugby World Cup.
The intense battle to take hold of the 2025 Rugby Africa Cup. Zimbabwe won the day's trophy with a 30-28 victory over Namibia, qualifying for the Rugby World Cup in Australia. This marks their third appearance at the Rugby World Cup.
Oh, it was a roller coaster of a game. It kept going either way. You know, Namibia were coming back. We were putting points on the board. But a special day for Zimbabwe today.
Algeria made an impressive finish in the tournament as they faced off against Kenya to snatch third place with a 15-5 win. This was their third consecutive time making it to the semi-finals. The team says they have a lot of work ahead to tie up the loose ends as they get ready for the next season.
Keep all the players together more often, so we need to gather during the year because we just have 1 week of preparation before each Africa Cup. That's not enough. So we already spoke with the president and we know that during the season we need to work with our players to keep them involved in the process and to keep them prepared for the next tournament.
While Kenya admits it didn't fight hard enough for its crucial qualifier.
Not our best. Never took our chances when we had them. A few of mistakes that Algeria capitalized and they kept on playing in the right areas, which we didn't. We tried, but mistakes pulled us away from their try box.
In front of a home crowd, Uganda maintained a relentless pace to stay in the continent's top tier after beating Cote d'Ivoire to secure a massive 37-17 victory. Isabel Nakiria, CGTN Kampala.
Meanwhile, Niger opens investigations into a $5 million US dollar sale of Martian meteorite found in Ahadas region.
Niger says it will open an investigation into the sale of a Martian meteorite discovered in the West African country's Agadez region in 2023. The rock is the largest piece of Mars ever found on Earth and sold for more than $5 million
of them doing business
in New York.
We've ensured continuity.
In a statement broadcast on public television, the government said it has instructed the Minister of Mines, Higher Education and Justice to look into the case, which it said likely bears the hallmarks of illicit international trafficking. At 25 kilograms, the red, brown and grey meteorite is about 70% larger than the next largest piece of Mars found on Earth. It represents nearly 7% of all Martian material currently on this planet, according to Sotheby's auction house, which led the sale. It was discovered by a meteorite hunter in the Sahara Desert in 2023. The identity of the buyer has not been disclosed.
Meanwhile, 568 people have survived after an Indonesian passenger ferry caught fire at sea, killing 3 people.
A dramatic ferry fire off the coast of Indonesia leaves 3 people dead. Over 560 others were rescued in a massive maritime operation. The KM Barcelona 5 en route to Manador from Talalode Islands caught fire midday Sunday. Passengers, many wearing life jackets, were seen jumping into the sea as towering flames and black smoke engulfed the vessel. Terrified and stranded in choppy waters, some were rescued by local fishermen, while others were pulled from the sea by 6 rescue ships, a Coast Guard vessel and inflatable boats. Authorities say the blaze began at the rear of the ferry and was put out within an hour. Although the manifest listed just 295 people on board, a staggering 568 survivors were rescued. Among the survivors, a 2-month-old baby, who was initially thought dead but was revived in hospital. Indonesia, made up of over 17,000 islands, depends heavily on ferries, but safety remains a serious issue. Just this month, another ferry sank near Bali, killing at least 19. The investigation into what sparked the latest blaze is ongoing.
From military coups to elections, where is African democracy heading?
Failed revolutions, military coups, and unfair elections. In many African nations, observers are denouncing an alarming democratic backslide. But why is this the case, and what risks is democracy facing? These are the questions Senegalese journalist Ousmane Diaye asks in his book released last week in French, Africa Against Democracy, Myths, Denial and Dangers.
We are currently observing a quite unprecedented democratic regression because disputing democracy is openly accepted today in the Sahel, in Burkina Faso, Mali, Niger, the Alliance of Sahel States. We are seeing an explicit and official rhetoric of rejecting democracy in all these 3 countries.
Since 2020, the continent has seen 9 successful military coups, with most of them taking place in West Africa. But not only such military regimes reject democracy, according to Ndiaye. Elected leaders like Kais Saied, president of Tunisia, have also taken to repressing freedoms and using democratic appearances to disguise their autocratic regimes.
On paper, the institutions are democratic. There is a parliament, a national assembly, an independent electoral commission, but de facto, nothing in the way they operate is democratic.
But Ndiaye also sees a reason to be hopeful.
I think the element of hope will be the population's capability of taking charge. For me, hope is the awakening of the citizens. By citizens, I don't only mean having an ID, an electoral card, but citizenship in terms of being aware of one's rights and duties and seizing the possibility of exercising them.
Autocratic regimes and brutal military juntas have made popular uprisings difficult in many countries. But in some, like Togo, the grip on power of long-term rulers has recently seen vivid protest from citizens. At the forefront is the young generation, determined to fight for its future.
At least 18 dead in South Korea flood and landslides.
At least 18 people have died in floods and landslides caused by days of torrential rain in South Korea. There are fears the death toll could rise as emergency rescue efforts continue, with many people still unaccounted for. Thousands of roads and buildings have been damaged. From the capital Seoul, here's Jake Kwon.
Trapped in a flash flood, a man is moved to safety from a campsite where he was enjoying a summer break. These torrential heavy rains are said to be a once-in-200-years event. In the county of Sancheong, where most of the deaths occurred, the danger is literally meters away as people rush to get out of the town. After nearly a week of heavy rain, at least 17 people have died across the country and 11 people are still missing. This village, just 60 miles from the capital, was completely submerged. Many in rural communities are struggling to protect their livestock.
I stayed up all night in the car. The situation was unbelievable. When the water gushed towards the house, the cows were trying to step anywhere they could to get a foothold in the floodwater, stretching their necks up to keep breathing and splashing through water. It was utter chaos.
On Sunday, after the rain subsided, rescue workers were still clearing the debris with the hope of finding those missing. Koreans call these monsoon rains summer guests. They come and break the oppressive heat. But as global temperatures rise, they're becoming increasingly unpredictable and violent. Jake Kwon, BBC News, Seoul.
And Jake gave us this update on the rescue operation a little earlier.
Well, the authority here and the rescue workers are really focusing their efforts in recovering or finding the rest of the missing people. Now, the nine people are still missing. A lot of them are understood to be, you know, under the rubble or under the landslide. Some of them were swept in the flash flood. Now, the reason so many people were trapped in this flash flood for the past 4 days is because this, like many parts in the world, is the peak summer vacation season. Many people from Seoul, the capital, have taken refuge in the mountains to escape the oppressive heat, which, you know, here rises frequently to in the high 30s. Many of them were camping or taking refuge in the hotels on the mountainside or the hillside, and they were playing in the water. So when the flash flood came, a lot of them were trapped, which prompted the rescue workers to install zip lines or try to rescue them using helicopters, as you've seen in the video just before. Now, in the Gapyeong County, that's where it happened. That was one of the area that was hard hit. And this is the area closest to Seoul. Now, in the south, in Sancheong County, this is where most of the deaths occurred. 10 people died. 4 are still considered missing. This is a mountain village which was directly hit by a landslide. Now, 80% of South Korea is a mountain, and there's always a risk of landslide whenever this kind of heavy rain comes to this town.
Jake Kwon reporting that from South Korea.
Japan Prime Minister Ishba vows to stay on despite election loss.
We just want to look at that result in Japan. As you have been hearing, Japan's Prime Minister Shigeru Ishiba has reiterated he will stay on in office as Prime Minister despite his governing coalition losing its majority in the upper house of parliament in national elections. Mr. Ishiba said the public had delivered a harsh judgment, but there were too many pressing issues to resolve for him to resign now. And he did, of course, talk about the threat of extra US tariffs and inflation. Japan's opposition parties are fragmented and unlikely to try to form a government themselves. The governing bloc lost control of the more powerful lower house in October. Well, John Nilsson Wright is Associate Professor at the University of Cambridge and Head of Japan and Korea's program at the Center for Geopolitics. And he gave me his thoughts about the LDP's election defeat.
Going into this election, Prime Minister Ishiba was in a very weak position. All of the things that your correspondent was describing, the impact of very high price inflation at more than 3% in Japan, the question of rice prices, the issue of corruption as it's dominated the LDP, together with another issue which has been really, I think, increasingly stoked by parties like Sanseto, the question of immigration, particularly Chinese immigration, has really combined together with the issue of tariff pressure from the United States to create a crisis of confidence, if you like, in the governing LDP. So this outcome is not a surprise. I think what is, however, something of a surprise is the rise of far-right nationalist parties. For a long time, we assumed that populism really had no traction in Japan. I think we now have to revise that consideration. And it raises interesting questions about what the government does now if Mr. Ishiba is able to tough it out. He said he will stay as prime minister, but there will be real pressure from within his party after three major defeats, the lower house election back in October, recent metropolitan elections in Tokyo, and now this dramatic defeat in the upper house election makes his position, I would say, almost untenable. But we'll have to wait and see to see what members of his own party decide to do.
And just talk us through what might happen going forward, because as you say, to many it might seem surprising that this party, Sanseto, has done as well as it did. There is a real shift among the young Japanese in terms of what they're expecting from this government, whereas previous generations have just kind of opted for stability every time and stuck with what they know. It would seem that's no longer something that the LDP can just assume. Complacency, no. You know, many argue they've been very complacent in government.
Well, the trouble is there are no good policy options at the moment. I mean, in order to address the concerns of voters who are concerned with price inflation, the government will now come under pressure to follow through with some of the proposals from the opposition parties, one of which is a cut in the consumption tax, which, of course, would have an immediate benefit in terms of addressing the cost of living issues for ordinary Japanese voters. But it would also cut into social security provision, which is hugely important for an aging population. It would also reduce government revenue. It would increase the pressure on the government to increase reliance on government debt. This is a country with a 260% debt-to-GDP ratio. The markets will then punish the government and the country, all of this happening at a time when the squeeze in the external trade sector is becoming even more pronounced, given those very high threats of 25% tariffs on Japan's auto sector and a further 25% increase in tariffs on all Japanese exports to the United States.
On market talks, EU oil sanctions are said to have limited impact on Russia.
Oil holds its decline with Russian energy curbs in focus. Oil prices were little changed to start the week as traders assessed the impact of new European sanctions on Russian oil supplies. The latest sanctions are aimed at further crimping the Kremlin's energy revenue, the bulk of which comes from oil exports to India and China. Meanwhile, US oil drilling is in the doldrums and crucial trade deals have yet to be reached. Homer Yuen Falakshahi is senior oil analyst for Kepler. So Russia reacted by saying they've built up a certain immunity to Western sanctions. How effective really are these sanctions?
Indeed, I mean, you know, generally speaking, the EU sanctions do not have the same reach as you know, the US OFAC sanctions per se. So I think we could see some impact, but definitely we remain relatively limited, I'd say. But generally speaking, I mean, this package is quite, you know, tough and quite ambitious compared to some of the previous EU packages. So I think we may see actually a reshuffling of some of those flows, whether that's crude, whether that's refined products. And so indeed, it will have an impact. But the fact that you see the market not reacting or, you know, showing very little reaction you know, it's really an indication of what the market perceives those sanctions as being, you know, the fact that they are going to have limited impact.
You mentioned refined products there, and the bloc gets about 15% of its seaborne diesel from India and Turkey. They purchase crude from Russia. Could we see some signs of stress in refined oil products?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, looking at the diesel market, it's been already quite tight over the past few weeks already. Diesel cracks have been outperforming other products' cracks. I think the near-term outlook is quite bullish for diesel cracks, especially in the Atlantic Basin. Again, the market reaction has been relatively muted on diesel too, meaning that the market is kind of confident that we, you know, in the European Union, you could have alternative supplies coming from the U.S. Gulf Coast, for example, or from the Middle East. I think it's also an indication that the market also believes there are going to be more loopholes, just like we saw for crude when it comes to diesel. For instance, you know, we could see Indian diesel reach, I don't know, for example, the Middle East. And then in turn, we could see more Middle Eastern diesel exports go to Europe. So, you know, the barrels will still be there. It's just that, you know, we're probably going to see a reshuffling of how they actually reach the European Union.
President Trump has threatened to impose stiff economic penalties on Russia. Would we see a larger oil market reaction if he follows through?
I think so, yes. I mean, it really depends on whether that's it's going to be secondary sanctions, secondary tariffs. You know, the administration itself is not very, I would say, clear on what it really wants out there. that said, you know, when it comes to both types of sanctions, if it's secondary sanctions, it's obviously a lot much, I would say, stricter, much larger impact, because that means that the likes of probably, you know, India and Turkey will turn their back on Russian crude. China, because there's already secondary sanctions on Iran, and they have been continuing to import Iranian crude, we may see continuous buying from China. But at the same time, you know, Iranian crude being bought by China is really done by the independent refineries. And that means that the state-owned refineries in China would also turn their back on Russian crude.
U.S. oil drilling rigs dropped for a ninth straight week on Friday. That's the longest streak in 5 years. Why the persistent drop in demands? Is this a serious worry?
I think so. You know, it really shows that, I mean, where prices are is really not an incentive for producers to increase drilling activity.
With that being said, we have now come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Reader Analysis. Now, do stay tuned for the Onkon Nadingi program brought to you by Louise Shimi, and thereafter that, the Home Run Show brought to you by Dwight and Helmut starts off at 16:30. From Indafa, happy Juju, it is goodbye. I'll see you again tomorrow, same time, same place, as we bring you yet another topic for us to analyze.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Ipurane ngeno wapombwa Eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite okoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshuana. Onongeshe fa ya pombwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi tayo loka. Opone ujendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onoreka tuimwe mbali heali nola natu. Heali bali no heali ile konderewa. Nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts or previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Daily, want to know Eagle about Namibia's dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Omudiha, utekirwa kaguna, iimatina.